From Iowa Public Radio, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. Rural Iowa continues to lose population, prompting some communities to explore new and unique ways to draw people back, including financial incentives and expanded cultural and entertainment opportunities. This hour on The Exchange, we'll learn about innovative programs in Franklin County in north-central Iowa and Adams County in southwest Iowa. We'll also discuss what role the government plays in the health of rural Iowa. Are Washington's policies propping up small towns or hurting their chances for survival? Find out next on The Exchange. But first, the news. Good morning or good afternoon, rather. I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio. Iowa is widely expected to lose a congressional seat after the 2010 census because of a failure to keep pace with the growth of the rest of the nation as a whole. In rural areas, population decline has long been a concern. In a moment, I'll be joined by Linn County Supervisor Lou Barron, who is the vice chair of a group that lobbies on behalf of rural counties in Washington, D.C. I'll also be joined by Karen Mitchell, the executive director of the Franklin County Development Association in north central Iowa. But first, we take a look at an innovative program in Franklin County, which seeks to entice young people to come back to where they grew up. Iowa Public Radio's Sarah McCammon has this profile.
Corrine and Darwin Van Horn have three boys and two busy careers. They've moved all around the state during almost 18 years of marriage, but their story begins in rural Franklin County about three decades ago.
When I was going into sixth grade, Darwin and I were both at the same church camp, and I had a crush on him all week long, but he gave me no attention whatsoever. But it was actually at the Franklin County Fair where we reconnected and started talking and started dating after that, so... And our wedding reception was at Franklin County Fairgrounds.
In October, they moved the family back to Franklin County from their most recent home of Mason City, about half an hour away. Darwin says with their parents aging and the boys growing quickly, they wanted to be closer to home.
I don't think this was ever on our radar to say, hey, that's our plan to come back to Franklin County. I can honestly say that wasn't mine. But I think as you get older, I think you personally kind of sort through things that you value the most.
Darwin works with local teenagers through a Christian ministry called Youth for Christ. He's launched a new chapter in the county. The move also brought Corrine closer to her job as clinic manager at Franklin Medical Center. The Van Horns got some help from a low-interest loan program offered by a local bank. The Come Home to Franklin County program offers below-market home and car loans to graduates of the county's three high schools who've moved away. Hampton State Bank initially set aside $1 million for the program in 2005 and announced another million this year. Bank President Brad Davis says young professionals are essential to the community's future.
Really what we want these households to do is to come back, stay a while, put down some roots, pay property taxes, and then everything else that goes with being a resident of Franklin County. Hopefully they'll shop at our retail establishments and use our healthcare facilities and our recreational facilities and send their children to our schools.
So far, 15 individuals or families have moved back through the program, and two more are in the process. That's significant in a county whose population declined over the century beginning in 1900 from around 15,000 people to fewer than 11,000 in the year 2000. And Davis says he's talked with several other small-town banks in Iowa and some in a couple of other states about launching similar efforts. That kind of innovation is important for small towns who want to survive, says Bill Minner, the state director for the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Development Agency.
So there can be success for small towns, but a lot of it has to do with you know, the folks who live there, the leaders that they have, and their vision for the future.
Leaders of some larger Iowa communities are also concerned about the loss of young people. In western Iowa, Sioux City's economic development director, Marty Doherty, says an ad campaign during the holidays targets the parents of young professionals who've moved away but come back to visit.
We really believe that the future of Iowa, the future of our community is going to be primarily dependent on whether young people choose to live here or not.
Doherty hopes a website touting the area's housing, jobs, and recreational opportunities will prompt young people from Sioux City to give their hometown another look. For their part, Corrine and Darwin Van Horn say they're glad they came home and they intend to stay.
As we look, too, as I think through like the different places that we've lived, we've always referred to this as home. I mean, we always, even though we lived there, we always would talk about, well, we're going home this weekend. And now it just feels like we're home.
In Franklin County, I'm Sarah McCammon, Iowa Public Radio News.
Joining us now to discuss Franklin County's program is Karen Mitchell, the Executive Director of the Franklin County Development Association. Karen, thanks for being on the program.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, let me ask you a little bit about Come Home to Franklin County. How did you come up with this, and how long ago has it been?
Well, we did not come up with it. The Hampton State Bank people did, and we're thrilled that they did. And it's been around for a couple years now.
Well, and then we heard about the bank program in Sarah's piece, but have there been other initiatives built around that then in the county?
Not necessarily built around it, but initiatives that are compatible to it, initiatives like low-interest revolving loan funds, support programs. We scholarship if they want to start new businesses, but nothing that is directly tied to that program.
All right. If that sounded familiar to you, the story of Corrine and Darwin Van Home, we'd like to have you join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Have you left your rural Iowa home? Have you returned to rural Iowa after being away? 1-866-780-9100, or you can email us at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Karen, it's a difficult time for Iowa when young people move away and communities are sad to lose their younger people. What argument can you make to them to bring them back? Or does it have to be the right timing? Does it have to be parents aging? Or can you make the argument before they ever leave?
We can make the argument before they leave. However, we never really want to keep anybody caged. There is an advantage in letting them go, letting them see what the rest of the world is like, and then coming back here like the Van Horns did when they get serious about their life. They tend to have matured a little bit by then and can appreciate the qualities of the communities such as ours. But we do. The biggest key to any of that then is having the job for them and the quality of life. And that's where rural areas like ours will sometimes come up with challenges in facing that, especially in today's climate, is getting those jobs that will give them a discretionary income to keep them happy and then create the environment that will keep them happy as well.
You mentioned discretionary income. So is it a factor of not just a job, but the right kind of job?
Exactly. It has to be something that they are interested in, that they feel rewarded in, and then can provide them with the extra money that lets them enjoy the region.
Is it a bit of a catch-22 for rural communities in the sense that some businesses are hesitant to build or locate there because there is a lack of people, yet without the jobs you can't lure the people back? I mean, is it the chicken and the egg which comes first?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. What we are fortunate in here in Franklin County, though, is that our average worker age is 40. And that's a great age and easily saleable to prospective companies because that age group is established. They generally have young families. They need those jobs. So instead of a career tracker that you might find in the very early 20s, we can sell this company on the fact that we have a very stable, rooted workforce and that we do have programs to bring in the younger workers and to encourage them through school. We go and meet with them when they're in grade school, when they're in junior high, when they're in high school, and try to maintain a linkage as we go along. So we have a feeder program for that company.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Karen Mitchell, the Executive Director of the Franklin County Development Association. So would you say most of your efforts are focused on the individuals or the businesses that you're trying to bring to the county?
Businesses.
And then what do you do? Because that's a real race. You know, you're in the race with other communities. You're in the race with other states. That's a real difficult position to be in when you're trying to lure companies, isn't it?
It is a real challenge. And even though we have tremendous assets, we recognize that so many other communities do. So business startup and attraction are our two things. We recognize that this is more of an entrepreneur climate than probably in many, many years, if not decades, and we work to encourage entrepreneurism. Existing business expansion, something that, you know, they already like it here, let's help them grow here. And then business attraction is really where more of our talent is, and that's what we focus on.
All right. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. If you'd like to join our conversation, join us at 866-780-9100. Have you lived in rural Iowa? Have you decided you never want to leave? Or have you left and returned? Are you wanting to return and don't know if there's a job there for you? We'd love to hear your story at 866-780-9100. Maggie has called us from Vinton. Maggie, thanks so much for calling The Exchange today.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your story.
I grew up in Vinton, Iowa, a town of about 5,000, and graduated from there. After I graduated college, I met my husband, who is also from Vinton. We got married shortly after that, and I went through medical school in at the University of Iowa, and recently made the decision upon the completion of my residency program that I'll be returning to Vinton to practice there.
And was that a difficult decision? Vinton's what, between Cedar Rapids and Waterloo, but it's a smaller community. Will you have to drive to make a living, or can you do it right in Vinton?
Oh, no. Vinton has a very very great hospital and clinic there, so I signed a contract at the hospital there. But it was a difficult decision to move back. I think as a young professional, we have a lot of just pressure that if you don't go and leave and go to a big city that you haven't really made it, that coming back, there was this feeling of, well, am I just resigning myself to come back? But through a lot of soul searching, my husband and I decided that that was the best place to raise our family. And it really honestly was the best opportunity for me, too, with rural loan repayment and other programs like that.
All right. And so that was a key, the fact that they offered that kind of incentive for you.
Oh, most definitely. It made the difference between being a physician in a city or being a physician in a small town. Having that extra incentive was huge. I can get pretty much all my loans paid off for living in a place that we actually enjoy anyway. So that was a big incentive.
All right. Maggie, thanks so much for the call. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We're discussing rural communities and what the results are of their efforts to lure people back. Is it working? Or is the latest census coming up this year going to show decline continues? We'd like to have you join our conversation at 1-866-780-9100. We'll take a break and be back in just a moment on Iowa Public Radio. This is Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. My guest this hour, Karen Mitchell, the executive director of the Franklin County Development Association, also joining us now, Linn County Supervisor Lou Barron, vice chair of the Rural Action Caucus for the National Association of Counties. Thanks for joining us, Lou.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let me ask you both, before we talk a little bit about some of Supervisor Barron's work in Washington, D.C., Maggie from Vinton, I thought, brought up a very interesting point that part of her decision in going back to the community she was raised in, really there was some personal internal struggles with, well, have I gone out and tried to make it in the big, you know, the big city, or have I expanded my wings enough? And sometimes there is that almost internal pressure or peer pressure to feel like you've got to go out and see what the rest of the world has to offer. And some of these people might be happier staying where they grew up. I mean, for some people, that's the right decision. Do you have to battle that kind of image problem Iowa has, Karen?
Oh, absolutely. All the time. And what we try to do is get the testimonials, like what we heard, and put those in front of these people who are considering it. And then we try to analyze, all right, why is it you are trying to leave, or what's pulling you away, and see if that is something that we can address. Perhaps it is, perhaps it isn't.
All right. Lynn County Supervisor Lou Barron, as I said, is the vice chair of the Rural Action Caucus for the National Association of Counties. What is that?
Well, we're a bipartisan coalition of over 800 rural elected officials. And what we try to do is enhance the quality of life in rural communities through effective federal legislation. So every year we identify pressing issues facing rural communities, and we bring those issues to the attention of the administration and members of Congress.
You know, we often think about declining population as an issue of people's choices, people wanting to move away or people wanting to, you know, transportation is easier. It's easier to live a long distance from your family now than it used to be. But are there issues that you've found where government plays a role positively or negatively in the size of a smaller community? I mean, do their policies help or hurt rural Iowa?
Oh, I think they absolutely help rural Iowa. And that's what we need to do. We need to, help all of our rural communities, specifically I know the USDA's got a rural development funds they do have a broad range of programs that are critical to rural communities, like funding for wastewater infrastructure, community facilities, broadband, housing, renewable energy, and business development. Now, that can be some basis to, have more business development and to create jobs. And I think that our former governor, now Secretary Vilsack, is, laying out a vision to vitalize rural America through rural development. And, yeah, I think that it can really help us.
Okay. You were just in Washington, D.C. recently with this group, correct?
Yes.
What were some of the key issues you were pressing lawmakers about? What were you telling our U.S. senators and representatives that needs to be done, in your opinion?
Well, one is with the reauthorization of the highway bill. Much of our nation's roadway system was put in the 1930s, and it's just simply worn out. We need improvements in roads, bridges, transportation systems. And some little-known facts are that county government owns 45% of the nation's 4 million-mile highway and road system. And, we need good farm-to-market roads that we can deliver our commodities, but also serve the citizens that live in the county. We're also asking for an amendment in that highway bill to help to create more funding for bridges. County governments own 256,000 bridges, and that's 44% of all the bridges, of which 85,000 are rated deficient. Those things are important. We also have a transportation system. Here in Iowa, we run the paratransit system, we need to make sure that we get funding in that. And particularly in the rural area, that's becoming more and more important as we have an aging society.
Well, let me ask you about that, because people don't, in my mind, move back because of roads or bridges. But is that the link to attracting better businesses because you have an adequate or a solid transportation system, or is it a matter of keeping taxes lower because you're getting the financial assistance from the federal government and keeping lower local taxes then? Or how is that helpful in attracting people?
It is extremely important in attracting people and businesses. You can't locate a new home or a business that isn't within 2 miles of a hard surface road. So therefore, the more hard surface roads you have throughout a county, the more development you might have, too. And so it's very much linked together.
All right. Let's talk to Crystal in Forest City. Crystal, joining us by phone at 1-866-780-9100. Crystal, you moved back to Iowa?
Yeah, we just moved back last fall from the Minneapolis area.
What brought you back? What sent you away, and what brought you back?
or when I graduated from high school, the desire to get out of state, go somewhere different for college, went up to the St. Peter area and attended college there and decided to stay up there and get a job as a nurse in one of the hospitals because it paid significantly more than coming back to Iowa as a nurse.
Then what and brought then, you back?
What brought us back is we wanted to raise our family in the small town setting. We wanted to be able to have some acres of land. So we lived right outside of town on 4 acres of land, something that we traded in our townhouse for up in the city life to be able to have more space, a small town community to be able to just raise our family in.
All right. Crystal, thanks so much for the call. What would you tell people that are looking to make this move? Or what would you tell Supervisor Barron and Karen Mitchell that is something that, would bring people like yourself back? I think we lost Crystal. Are you there, Crystal? No, I think we lost her. But when you hear that story that in part she stayed because the salaries were better up there, and then it was about raising kids and having a little bit of land, are salaries an issue that, government can play a role in, Supervisor Barron? Is that something that you look at?
Yes, we do, and just kind of on a side view, when we put money into economic development, we like it to pay so much per hour. We want jobs that have good quality pay for the employees. So, yes, it does.
All right. Well, what other things are you lobbying Congress about at this time? Is there there are issues that, raise property taxes or local taxes for residents because of federal funding?
Yes. As a matter of fact, one of the things that we that's a priority this year is the loss of federal health benefits for pre-conviction inmates. And what that boils down to is currently a person that's incarcerated in our county jail or juvenile detention center is no longer eligible to receive federal matching payments for Medicaid or Medicare benefits. That means that the county taxpayer then has to pick up that tab. And I would note that there's a high percentage of people that come into the jail that need medicine. They either have diabetes, high blood pressure, depression. Right here in Linn County, it costs taxpayers here $100,000 annually because they lose that benefit. Now, all we're asking for is that they continue to have their federal health benefits until they are convicted of a crime and become ward of the state. I mean, in between it, just doesn't make any sense. And sometimes these people are even terminated and have to be reinstated into Medicare, and that just takes a lot of time and money for that. It seems to me like having this seamless makes a lot more sense.
Was this a recent change?
This is something that we're lobbying on. They haven't changed it yet. I know that Congressman Braley has signed on as a co-sponsor on this bill, and this is something that we'd really like to get this federal law changed. And
so
I know
this has been going on for quite a while is what I mean. Then,
it has been going on for quite a while.
And so when we come back, let's talk about taxes and whether that has an impact on young people staying, returning, or whether that's even part of their decision making. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We're talking about rural Iowa and rural communities and what they can do to lure people back. This is Iowa Public Radio. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio, and I'm Janine Beck. In the 2010 census count, Iowa is expected to continue to lose population and, as a result, even lose a congressional seat. This hour, we're speaking with county residents about and county supervisors about what they are doing to try to lure people back to their communities. Linn County Supervisor Lou Barron is the vice chair of the Rural Action Caucus for the National Association of Counties and was recently in Washington, D.C., lobbying Congress about legislation they believe will make life easier in rural Iowa. Lou, you mentioned before the break that you were concerned about federal payments for those arrested and that they lose some of their health care benefits and the county has to pick up the tab. How does that affect the population in Iowa? Is there a concern that high taxation is an issue for people leaving or coming back?
Well, I think how it affects people in general is that a business is not going to locate in a place where the taxes are too high. That'll affect their bottom line. So we need to keep our taxes down so that we have the jobs so we can attract people to come back to Iowa.
Okay, so it's a recruitment issue for businesses. All right.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk to Ryan, who's called from Iowa City. Ryan, thanks for hanging on the line. I know you have an issue you want to bring up.
Yeah, no worries. My issue is this. In the brief way of background, I grew up in northwestern Iowa in Cherokee County, went to school at the University of Iowa, and left in 1999, and had a career with the Associated Press. I traveled the world and the country for about 9 years and have recently come back for graduate school. Now, you know, in that time, going off into the world and seeing all these things, which everyone I graduated high school with desired to do, you know, you learn a lot of things about Iowa, looking at it from an outsider. And the thing about what I want to bring up about this discussion is that all of these things that are being discussed, all of these tax incentives to bring businesses in, all of these improvements to make rural life more enticing, it basically sounds to me that this is just sort of equalizing the state with the rest of the nation. You know, for example, my parents live in northwest Iowa. They don't have broadband. They don't have high-speed internet, which seems to me to be one of these crucial things that every other place in the world has. So what I'd like to hear is how, like, I'd like to see this discussion move in a direction that is not so much about equalizing Iowa with the rest of the nation, but what we can do to expand the possibilities. And I think we're touching on that a little bit with this discussion of increasing business.
All right, Ryan, what brought you back? It was grad school? Was it an ability to live cheaper? And, I mean, you can go to grad school in a lot of places. Why Iowa?
I got accepted to the Writers' Workshop. Yeah,
okay.
That's one place. So.
And that's a pretty good program here in Iowa.
Yeah. That's the only reason I came back. So.
All right. Thanks so much for your call.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, Supervisor Barron, you mentioned broadband and one of the difficulties. What movement are you seeing on that? Because that's something that's been talked about in the state for at least 10 years, that there are parts of Iowa that need that connectivity still to this day.
That is a big emphasis in Washington, D.C. with our delegation. And USDA has a particular program for broadband and the expansion of broadband. And I believe the ERA funds also have broadband.
And the ERA funds are the stimulus money.
Yeah, the stimulus money that, you know, it is extremely important that we get broadband out there. The United States, we only have 60% of our country covered with broadband. That's not enough. You can't get rural communities to compete without it. So there is programs out there. There is emphasis in this administration, and I look forward to getting broadband everywhere.
All right. Thank you. Let's bring on Beth Waddle, the executive director of the Adams Community Economic Development Corporation. Adams County is the least populated county in the state. Ms. Waddle, do you face specific problems because of that in your communities?
Well, of course, there's always challenges in living in a rural area, but I think our community has taken an active, creative, and enthusiastic approach into building the quality of life that's desirable, and we're always working with that creative energy to build new opportunities and to bring people back to our community.
You know, so much of what we've talked about is an attempt to lure businesses to Iowa so that there will be jobs for young people. You guys have taken a different tack in Adams County. Talk to me about the Artist in Residency program.
Okay, well, yeah, we really have a really broad-based approach that we do here. We do the industrial recruitment and business recruitment like everyone else, but we're also looking at ways to bring in and build on our creative culture. So we took a small group of people, individuals, came up with an idea of really taking that creative energy and focusing on the arts. And so our Adams Community Economic Development Group, which you'll hear me refer to as ACID, was able to work with a current property owner who used to have the hardware store in our community that was standing empty. And we were able to capitalize and work up a lease agreement with that and in cooperation with our local hospital that was doing a renovation project and being able to use sustainable materials from the renovation. We were able to turn that hardware store into an art gallery, studio, and a residency program for artists.
What is a residency program for artists? What's that mean?
Well, typically it's where an artist takes time away from wherever they were living currently, comes into a new space to be able to either focus on perhaps a commission that they're working on, or maybe they're looking to do some new work in a different area that they don't have the time to focus on when where they're at. So it brings them out of their regular day-to-day work and gives them a selected space that they can actually focus on either new work or a commission or those kind of things. Our program is a little bit unique because it allows, like I said, it has studio space and residency. So we have two apartments in the upper story of this building. We have a studio and gallery space with art for sale in our lower level. But the thing that's unique about ours is that the fee that they pay to be a part of this artist in residency program, everything except the utilities goes into a separate account for them while they're here. They can have a 3, 6, 9, or 12 month residency program, and sometimes that's been extended. But the funds, less the utilities, go into an escrow account that if they decide to open a studio space in our community, they can have that funding back to help them start their business here.
And you talked about the apartment. Do they pay rent, or is that something that's...
Right. They pay a fee to be in this residency program, which includes the rent and utilities and the studio space downstairs. But only the utilities get spent, and the rest stays in escrow until they determine that they don't want to start a studio here and they leave.
Okay. Let's talk to Rachel Sims, a jeweler who took advantage of the Artist in Residency program in the Corning Center for the Fine Arts. Rachel, you were overseas when you heard about this program. Is that right?
Yes. I was living and working in Switzerland as a watch designer.
But are you from Iowa originally?
Yes, my family's here in Des Moines.
So you hear about this. You're in Switzerland. What brings you back?
At that point in time, I had been overseas for a while and working for a company, and I had trained to be an independent artist, and I was ready to make that move and try it full time. I knew that I needed the support of my family and a way to be able to afford to live and work full time as an artist, and this just seemed the perfect solution to that.
How did you find living in small town Iowa? I mean, was it satisfactory? Did you learn a lot? Did it provide you the time and the resources that you didn't have in Switzerland?
I really enjoyed it. Obviously, it's two very different things, but living in a rural community, there is such a sense of everybody helping out, and you know, the fact that I can walk down the street and wave hi to the mayor and know who it is, the fact that everybody knows almost everybody by name, it's a really neat feeling.
You work in jewelry, metalsmith, glass, bead making, things like that. Did you find a market for your product there, or was it that you make the product in Corning and then, you know, through traditional methods of marketing, maybe now online or other ways, or did you sell it to local residents?
A little bit of both. I actually had a pretty good following here locally. I also travel around the state teaching workshops, so this kind of gave me the home base to go from. I also travel during the summer doing shows, you know, in the Midwest region. So it's kind of a combination of all of those. I find as an artist, you know, if you are selling through galleries, if you are traveling around to shows, it doesn't really matter where home base is, as long as you can, you know, you have the possibility to travel and get there.
Mm-hmm. But you're not still in Corning, right?
Not at the moment.
And what caused you to leave?
At that time, I was trying to grow the teaching end of my business a little bit more, and because it is such a small community, it's hard to get a large group of people to take classes. I would ultimately like to end up back here, but I think that's a little bit farther down the road in my career.
Mm-hmm. Beth, let me come back to you as the executive director of the Adams Community Economic Development Corporation. How many of the artists through the program, how many have you had, and how many have stayed in the community after, or is that really the goal?
Well, it's a twofold goal. You know, ideally, we'd love to have people stay here. The other thing that's unique about this business is, as part of the Art Center, they also work with the Area Education Agency and develop art shows for students to have someplace to show art to help build that whole career path. And so we work through the AAA and have several, like, 12 to 15 schools participate in annual shows, which brings their families, their friends, their schools into our community who spend dollars in our downtown. And so that helps our economic base also, as with sales tax, with revenues for our small businesses, as well as brings a better awareness. You know, it's a great marketing tool also for the program. we're learning and changing with this program as we go. We've had about four artists in residence since its inception. Currently, they're doing a lot better job marketing the program, and so I think we've got seven or eight applications for resident artists that are looking to attend here over the next 2 to 3 years, and they're going through those and trying to find out what's the best fit for the artist and for our art center. But it's a process. It's a slow process, but we feel we've had quite a few successes. The number of people that come into the art center has been increasing every year, and it's a great asset for our community.
You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Back, and we're discussing life in rural Iowa and in rural communities. What has prompted you to come back to rural Iowa, or did you leave, and can you not be convinced to come back? Join our conversation at 1-866-780-9100 or email us at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Matt is on the line from Des Moines. Matt, thanks for calling The Exchange.
Yeah, thank you. I heard one of your guests mention the proposal that we cut taxes in our cities and our counties and across the state. And I want to suggest that having a strong tax base that allows us to have better livability programs, to have public arts, to have broadband access in our communities, to do those things will pay dividends much higher than just cutting taxes off the business bills. If we bring people back to our communities that buy new products, that'll help those businesses out that are already here a lot more and bring new businesses in whose employees want to live and work here in Iowa.
All right. Matt, thanks for that call. Supervisor Barron, let me ask you about that. Is that a struggle to find that balance between the appropriate tax base that you don't drive businesses away so that you have enough jobs, but that you have enough services? Because young people also want access to, you know, community attractions and, you know, event centers and skateboard parks and swimming pools and things like that, which require property taxes.
Absolutely. It is a balancing act, and I couldn't agree with the caller more. I really wasn't talking about cutting taxes. I was talking about maintaining taxes to be competitive, you know, particularly with our surrounding states, and I think Iowa's done a very good job of that. And but, yes, we need the quality of life things here, or we're not going to have people move back. And just for instance, trails are very important here, and there is in the federal government with the highway bill, that's where we get 80% of our funding is through that bill, and they're talking about eliminating it. I don't think we can afford to have that happen. So, yes, I agree. There's sometimes we need to have taxes to a good service for all of us.
I want to ask both Supervisor Barron and Beth Waddle this next question. This is from Derek in Iowa City wanting to ask about immigration populations in Iowa. He perceives that immigrants have been given a new life to many aging communities and wonders what you think about whether that's a good way to increase population in rural Iowa. Beth Waddle, let me begin with you in Adams County. Does it work to bring in immigrant populations, or is it a struggle in a smaller community?
Well, I think it depends on how you prepare for that. It definitely takes a good education base locally in preparing your residents for cultural changes, cultural perceptions, cultural just traditions, the traditions of those immigrants coming in, and making sure that the community is embracing, accepting, and mainly understanding what those changes are. We don't have a large diversity of cultural people in our community, but those that are here, you know, it's with understanding and trying to have the educational programs through the libraries, through the community college in the region, through our local school systems, and understanding, you know, what they bring to the community, not just looking at challenges for them and for our community.
The Supervisor Barron, you know, Linn County celebrates its Czechoslovakian heritage, yet is there a willingness in that county to embrace new immigrant populations? Is that something that would be helpful, or is it something that the county struggles with?
I think that's probably the only way we're going to really grow is through that. I know that Rockwell International needs to hire several more thousand engineers over the next 5 years. Those engineers are going to come from India. They're going to come from other places. We need to be a welcoming community here. So therefore, we do have a nonprofit organization called Diversity Focus that helps teach all of us how we can all live together.
All right. Thanks for that. Rachel, let me ask you, what are your plans in the future? Do you know yet? Would you said you'd like to move back to Corning. What would it take to make that happen? What do the Beth Waddles of the world need to know to bring someone like you back?
That is a very good question. I guess at this point, for me, it's mainly financial. While living in a rural community is much more affordable than being in a big town, you have to balance that with the availability of resources and students. With the internet, obviously resources becomes a little bit less important. I guess making it affordable for the artists, you know, we don't make a high income, so we need to be able to figure out how to live and survive in a place.
Is transportation an issue then when you live in a smaller community? Is an ability, you know, can you live without a vehicle? Can you get by and get to where you need to be, or is that an issue?
I really believe that a car is quite necessary in a rural town. From Corning, it's about a half an hour to, you know, the next closest city that has any sort of large population. So it's important, but there is a trolley system. There are ways to get around, and usually you can find a friend to bum a ride with.
All right. Let's talk to John in Marshalltown. John, thanks for calling The Exchange. What's your perspective on rural Iowa?
Well, I was I left Iowa in the 1960s and came back to live and raise our family and practice my profession beginning in 1970. So I have a long perspective on this effort of Iowa to try to stop the brain drain and revitalize rural Iowa. We live in rural Iowa. And I have to say that I have had a successful and satisfying career working out of rural Iowa. But in a lot of my career was spent in helping manufacturers either expand in rural Iowa or relocate to rural Iowa. So I have a long perspective on this, but maybe it's a rainy day out here, and maybe I'm going to rain on the parade a little bit. But the folks that I have been in contact with for 40 years, who are in the business of trying to improve rural Iowa, one of the things that's missing in their experience is they've never been in business themselves. And they're trying to advise people how to grow a business in a tough economic climate, and they've never made a payroll. And so as I listen to a program like today, I kind of crack a creaky smile and say, yeah, I've heard all of this before, and yet we still have the brain drain, and we still have people who are working on the problem who get paid whether they make progress or not.
All right. So, John, we need former executives. We need former business owners to turn around and work in economic development, to work in rural development.
I've worked in as a business owner, I've worked in economic development. I've worked with dozens and dozens of economic development corporations, development committees, and I just see this. It's just a struggle.
All right. John, thanks so much for the call and the perspective. Beth Waddle, let me come to you. In Adams County, is it difficult? You know, do you feel like getting the business community involved, the people that know what it takes to get off the ground and running, are they helping in this effort, or are they say, hey, look, I just got to run my business. I can't help out in growing the community?
No, you bet. We have over 200 volunteers that help meet monthly within our community, with our Chamber of Commerce, with our economic development, with our Main Street community, that are right there at the table helping determine what the concerns are, helping work through the possibilities, helping put the ideas together to help bring people into our community. And we look at it as a broad-based. We have industrial recruitment. We have small business recruitment. We're a national Main Street, Great American Main Street community. We're a Preserve America community. We're also one of Iowa's great places. We look at housing. We're a small community. It's hard to bring contractors into our community. So through our economic development group, we've got our own subdivision. We work with the building trades programs with our community college and with our local schools to build houses. After the first couple were built, we had to use a little bit of marketing dollars. Since then, the houses are usually on an offer before they're even completed. And so, you know, the need's there, but it's about working together, and our Board of Supervisors and our City Council and our Economic Development and our schools and our hospital all, you know, work together to move and vision and keep us thriving at a rate that, you know, we're comfortable with at this point. Would we like to be bigger and stronger and better? You bet. And there's always those kind of challenges. But it's because people care and people are willing to donate their time and services into making this, you know, one of Iowa's great places.
And let me ask you one last quick question. We don't have a lot of time, but is there this catch-22 where you've got to change enough with the times that you keep people, but that if you change too much, then that's not what they want to come back to? They kind of want to come back to the place they grew up and not have it be too different.
Well, you know, it's always a mixed blessing. You know, everybody has their ideal world. They're never going to find an ideal place anywhere. I would be my position. You know, you've got to accept what's there and be willing to help it change to make it more like what you want. But as long as there's enough basic services, you know, a safe place to bring up your children is huge, good school systems, strong school systems, and a quality of life that is fits your needs and desires, that's what's going to draw people to any community, no matter the size.
All right. Beth Waddle, Executive Director of Adams County Community Economic Development Corporation, thanks for your time. Rachel Sims, a jeweler who took advantage of the artist in residency program at the Corning Center for the Fine Arts. Lynn County Supervisor Lou Barron, thank you. And also Karen Mitchell, Executive Director of the Franklin County Development Association, who joined us in the first half hour of the program. This is The Exchange, produced by Catherine Perkins and Jeff Schmidt. We've had production assistance today from Rosalind Sixby. Also, we've had production assistance from Dennis Reese and John Pemble. Alex Hoyer produced today's program. I'm Janine Beck. Thanks for joining us on Iowa Public Radio.